Race of My Life, presented by Autosport.
I ran out of fuel a couple of kilometers before the end. I switched on the reserve and that went for a few hundred meters, and then the engine stopped again. I had to almost go through the last source on the starter motor and then let the car go down to Eau Rouge with the engine running. So I managed to win still because of the advantage. I think I had 45 seconds advantage starting the last lap or something close to that.
Those are the words of three-time Formula One race winner Thierry Boutsen in our Race of My Life series. I'm your regular host, Alex Kalanorkas, but for today's edition of the podcast, I'm going to hand over to Autosport Plus editor James Newbold, who spoke with Boutsen along with Autosport's sports car guru, Gary Watkins. We hope you enjoy this episode.
When you chose the race of your life for Autosport, the race that you chose was the 1986 Spa 1000 kilometres, which came 1 year after, sadly, Motorsport lost Stefan Beloff in an accident at Eau Rouge. He was, as you said earlier, he was your teammate in the Porsche 956, as it was then. You came back 1 year later with Frank Jelinski in the Porsche 962, run by Brune Motorsport, and you won just by a couple of metres, Thierry, a result that by any stretch of the imagination would be a great result in a 1,000-kilometre sports car race. But given the events that had happened the year before, I suppose it's a no-brainer, really, for the race of your life.
I mean, I choose it because of Stefan, for sure. I mean, be able to win the year after, to take our revenge on what happened the year before was something which phased out everything else. The race was tough. I mean, we had a really good car. The car was well balanced. It was quicker than the factory cars. It was quicker than anything else. But I ran out of fuel a couple of kilometers before the end. I switched on the reserve and that went for a few hundred meters, and then the engine stopped again. I had to almost go through the last source on the starter motor and then let the car go down to Eau Rouge with the engine running. So I managed to win still because of the advantage. I think I had 45 seconds advantage starting the last lap or something close to that, that I lost because of lack of fuel. So the car was good, and I was very happy that I still managed to win the race. I had to stop at the bottom because I had no fuel to carry on the slowing down lap. But for me, I mean, there's no other race that comes close to that, just because of the fact that Stefan was very deep in my heart. He was a very good friend. We've done a lot of good things together. We've learned from each other. We were very competitive. We were, I would say, on the same level of speed driving the Porsche. And it's an event that you never forget. I mean, your teammate being killed in this car that you were driving a few seconds before, it's really something that very few people experience. But it was a very sad moment. And taking revenge was what I wanted to do, and it worked.
Thierry, you say in Autosport magazine 30 years ago, in your Race of My Life story, you're saying how basically in the fuel formula era of Group C, that basically obviously you were looking to use almost every last drop of your fuel allocation, and your idea was to sort of, the team's idea was to run out almost as you crossed the flag, and you obviously ran out a few hundred meters before. I'm told it really started to run out at the bus stop. And then Derek Warwick was right with you into the source. And then he started to run out as well. Do you remember seeing him come up behind you and thinking, this hasn't quite worked out?
Well, yes, but it goes so quick. You know, I mean, this is the gap of what, the gap went closer and closer and closer, because I slowed down in the last lap, trying to save fuel until the end. I had engine stopping and you know, searching for fuel, and then I went up to the reserve and I thought, this may not do it until the end, so I slowed down as much as I could to keep the engine running. It's as I said, I had to use the starter motor to start it again at La Source, and then I remember now you telling me that he ran out of fuel as well, so we're both in the same situation, but I was ahead of him just about. But that was pure racing. I mean, we were playing with the elements like fuel consumption, tires wear, and brakes. And we didn't have any carbon brakes in these days. We had the solid iron brakes. So there was something else to manage. Huh?
Of course, Thierry, the track hadn't even been changed from the year before when Stefan had had his accident. The Eau Rouge that we know now is obviously very different than the one that you raced on back then. But the changes that were made to the corner didn't happen for a number of years after. So I just wondered, you know, how did you feel taking that in a sports car again? I mean, you took pole for that race, which I suppose would have been an important psychological victory in itself, even before the race had started, to show that, you know, you weren't afraid or anything like that. But how did you feel taking to the circuit again where your friend had tragically been killed?
It's very difficult to talk about that because you have different feelings all the time. When you sit in a racing car, I mean, you just go into your own little space and you try to do your job the best you can, drive as fast as possible, and you forget about all the rest. I couldn't drive the racing car thinking about Stefan. I was driving the racing car thinking about me and how to make the car better and how to drive better. It was a different corner. It was a difficult, very difficult corner. But I think the mistake that Stefan made is something which you cannot forgive. I mean, actually, he got killed with it, and it's something that I think nobody else has ever done there in the same way that he did it. And, you know, it can happen anywhere. I mean, we've seen two years ago when the poor guy was killed on the top of Eau Rouge. This happened in racing. Don't forget that we were in a time where people were getting killed in race cars. I mean, there were accidents every year in Formula One, in Group C, in all the other formulas. And I personally lost about, I think, 10 friends or 10 drivers. We were driving in the same races all the time. And then I lost about, I think it was 10 that were really fighting or racing with me and during my career. This is something which does not happen anymore. Luckily, we've gone through that stage and that went away because of the safety improvements. But there's one thing about racing driver. I mean, they want to drive the car wherever and whenever possible. I remember the first time I went to Atlanta in America, we were driving through the fast S's and there was not a single AMCO there. It was just trees. And I thought, you know, Jesus Christ, if we go off there, we're in the trees, big, big trees. How could we even do that? Then we were doing it. I mean, we were going through there every single lap there, doing a 1,000-kilometer race or 6-hour race there without any problem. Today, it would be totally impossible, thanks to all the improvements that have been made. And people realize that this black period must have an end. But to answer your question, I mean, I really wanted to revenge the death of Stefan, and whatever conditions there were, I would have really gone for it. There was nothing to stop me.
Gary, you're a bit of an aficionado of Group C racing. I mean, just how rare was it that two cars would come to the finish so close together?
Well, I think it probably was rare, but it wasn't obviously rare for cars to be running out of fuel or their drivers to be doing everything possible to get the, you know, easing off in the final laps to get the car to the finish. You know, that was quite a regular occurrence. And I guess while we're talking about fuel, I should ask you, Thierry, about your other Group C victory at Monza in 1983 with Yerst, which was the debut race of the 956 with a customer team. And you and Bob Wallach beat the factories. And that was all about fuel. You beat them on the fuel. I mean, what do you remember that race, about that race? And what was your secret there?
It was an incredible moment. I was called on Thursday by Reinhold Yerst to join them in Monza. He called me and said, please come and join us in Monza. You can drive the car. I said, oh, yes, I'm coming. I took my car. Less than 2 hours, I was in Monza from Monaco. And I sat in the car and I felt very comfortable in the car. I had no experience of the Porsche. First time that I was driving a Porsche, I had to get used to the brake pedal that was really spongy, to the gear lever that was very slow in changing gears, watching about the fuel consumption. We had absolutely no indication. Everything was was, you know, we were just thinking and then imagining what's happening with the engine, with the fuel consumption. We did a few tests during the practice about how the car would behave when we get to the limit and we had to switch on the reserve. But I had a really good teacher. Bob Bolek was excellent in teaching me how to drive the car, how to behave with the car, what to do, what not to do in order to be there. And I think in the factory, I've been a little bit too optimistic using the power, and we've been a little bit pessimistic by reducing the boost a little bit too much. So we managed to keep with everybody there, but when it was time to accelerate, we could do it, and then we managed to be there on time. Actually, I ran out of fuel in the last lap as well there. And I had to go on the reserve, and I did the whole complete lap on the reserve. I think, I mean, that was it. I mean, I couldn't have done one more lap, that's for sure. But that was calculated. That was calculated, no, because we had no way to calculate, but it was how we imagined it would happen, and how I was told to use the boost pressure in order to get there. So it was a good moment for me too. It was an incredibly important race for me, because I had done Formula 2 and I was vice champion in European Championship, and I had no entry door to the Formula 1, absolutely nothing. Everything was closed. And by winning Monza with a non-factory car, beating the factory, the next morning I had three phone calls from three different team owners in Formula 1. Say, do you want to test my car? Do you want to test my car? I said, yeah, I'm coming. And Jackie Oliver he gave me the chance to start in Formula 1, and I took it. But it was thanks to Monza.
It's an incredible story, Thierry, of a race that really got your Formula 1 career going. I mean, we've discussed already Spa 1986. We should add that was a race that, at the end of that season, was also vital for Brünn Motorsport in earning that team the World Sports Car Teams Championship over the factory Porsches that, had you not managed to hold off the Jaguar, then Brünn wouldn't have had that achievement. A real giant-killing achievement as a privateer team to win the World Championship as well. But you've also had a few...
Yes, but I must say one thing there. I mean, it was the championship lasted the whole year. So Brünn has been very consistent over all the races over the year. I was not able to do all the races with them because of the Formula One commitments. But I would have loved to do all the races, but it was not possible. But the team was very consistent, and that's a consistency plus a few highlights like Spa that give them the victory. And I was so happy with them, for them, so happy for them.
Yeah, as a privateer team to win a world championship against the might of the Porsche factory team and Jaguar, a huge achievement. But you've had a fair few successes, it's fair to say, Thierry. I mean, we talked earlier about Hungary 1990, your most famous Formula One win. There are two other Formula One wins you could have picked, both in the wet in 1989, and both at the expense of Ayrton Senna, coming in Canada when he had an engine failure, and in Australia when he crashed and you overtook Alessandro Nannini. Where did those races rank against Hungary, for example, when discussing your Formula One wins? In terms of the satisfaction, often, you know, people will say the first win is always the best, regardless of how they come. I suppose Canada was maybe a little bit unexpected, given that you only took the lead about three laps from the end. But how do you look back on those wins by comparison with Hungary, a race that you led all the way from the start to the finish?
In racing, you have some good days, you have some bad days. I mean, things go right, things can go wrong. At some moments, I mean, you have to take it as it comes. And if I take the lead three laps before the end because of a mechanical problem, that's life. I mean, I gave away some races like Le Mans 24 Hours a couple of times, even more than a couple of times. But the last, with the Toyota in 1998, I've been leading the race most of the way until, 25 minutes before the end when the gearbox broke. And I had to give the victory away to Porsche. That's racing. I mean, cars breaking down right at the end, it's bad luck. But if you are there and you can take that opportunity, it's good luck for you. And you can only say thank you to the other people that they give you the victory. But in Canada, I was there I mean, I fought all the way from my sixth position on the grid, and then I was there. I think during the race, I came in five times to change tires, going from slicks to wets, from wets to slicks to wets. And I was there at the end. I passed Ricardo, and I passed quite a few cars to be in that position, and I took advantage of it. In Australia, it's a different thing because Ethan was in the lead. We had an accident very early in the race, and you cannot blame me for winning a race when he had an accident after three laps. You know, I mean, trying too hard in bad conditions is sometimes not the thing to do. But I managed to keep on the road, even at one stage Ricardo passed me, then he spun, so I saw what the limit was, and I tried to stay on the good side of the limit and managed to win the race with quite a big advantage on the number two driver. But it was in racing, you have some bad days, some good days. You're sometimes lucky, sometimes you're well prepared, nothing happens. Sometimes you're not prepared and good things happen. So, you know, I've done many, many races. I've spent 22 years in racing, and I'm a sort of... In average, I'm very, very happy with what I've done.
Should we move on to Le Mans, James, as Thierry raised it? Obviously, I was at Le Mans a lot of times when you might well have won. Six times you led the race, three overall podiums. You mentioned 98 with Toyota when it looked like you were heading for victory. Do you feel that is the one that got away? Or if you maybe look at 93 and Peugeot, again, I think you led for like 8 hours, the 905 you were driving, and it was like a bizarre electrical problem.
It was a preventive stop that they did. They changed an exhaust pipe in order to change the ranking of the team, you know? I was leading the race, and all of a sudden, by changing the exhaust pipe, which may have broken, I lost the lead, and I was second. So that was a more political move than anything else. And they manipulated the result. But I'm still pissed off about that one. Because I feel that I should have won. I mean, the car was going very well. We were quicker than anybody else, and we managed to be in the lead at the right time. And as soon as Jean-Todd understood that there was a tactical and a political decision to change my exhaust pipe, which may have broken in the coming hour or 2 hours. So then he freezed it. He obliged us to stay 1, 2, 3 in the positions that we were. So I still have it here in my. I still don't digest that one. And the other times, I mean, I've lost it twice for incidents caused by my teammates, you know. and one time with a puncture when I was driving the Dower car, the 962 Dower. We had a puncture. Dennis Sullivan was driving with us, and I think it was 94. Had a puncture right at the beginning of the lap, and you had to do a complete lap at 5 kilometers an hour to bring the car back. And I think we lost probably two laps there. And we managed to catch up, but not enough to win the race. And that was really a sad moment too. And another time I lost the race because Hans put in the gravel and we lost too much time to bring the car back. And then I went out with the car and lost the front nose, which was not well fixed. So we had to do that again, make a stop again in the middle of the night. We lost a lot of time and could not finish the race in the position that we were able to. So I'm sure with all these ifs, I mean, if there were no ifs and no mistakes and no problems, I would have been winning the race at least 3 or 4 times. Yeah, but c'est la vie. C'est la vie.
Just on 98, are you aware that the reason, obviously, you'd had ongoing gearbox problems and it had a quick change gear cluster and they changed it twice? Are you aware that the final failure was as a result of the plug, the sump plug for the gearbox not being put in correctly and all the oil coming out.
No, sorry, you had to stick the knife in there.
Right. De Cortans has confirmed that to me.
Maybe, but in a race like this, it was such a disappointment because we had worked the whole year testing the car and doing development. I mean, the whole team of drivers plus mechanics plus the whole of Toyota Motorsports was dedicated to Le Mans. That was the only race that they were doing that year. And having the fastest car, being in the lead most of the race, and having to retire 25 minutes before the end was very dramatic, very dramatic. I lost the drive in the car and I could not even drive it back to the pits. And then the whole world is collapsing. It takes some time to recover from that.
I guess we need to talk about 99, which was the last race of your career. And of course, you were battling with BMW through the night in the GT1 Toyota you shared with Ralph Kelleners and Alan McNish. And that was shaping up to be an amazing race. Of course, then during the small hours, you had the accident that obviously put you in hospital with back injuries. That was one, for me, I would love to have seen that race go to its conclusion between your car and the what I call the quick BMW of Tom Christensen, Jörg Müller and JJ Lehto. They always tell me that they think they had the quicker car, and Ralph and Alan have always told me that they think the Toyota was the quicker car. How do you think it would have played out?
We could have gone 2-3 seconds a lap quicker if needed, that's for sure. I mean, the car was so good. And we were just pacing ourselves on the back. I mean, we had quite a bit of an advantage when I had the accident leading the race, but it was very easy. It was going very easy. We were driving very conservatively. We could have gone 3-4 seconds faster if needed, but we were saving on tires, saving on brakes, saving everything. So saving the mechanics work during the pit stops. So it was an easy one. It would have been a very easy one. I think there was no competition really from BMW. We were keeping them behind and giving them hope. but we were very comfortable in that. But unfortunately, I had the accident and suffered a lot after that. It was a very, very, very bad accident. Very bad.
It's a great irony, really, Thierry, that you had such bad luck at Le Mans, because one of the other major 24-hour races, Daytona, you turn up for the first time in 1985 and you win it. Tell us a little bit about that.
That was a strange race too, because I was taking part in the race with the Bayside car, Porsche 962, and the car was not very well prepared. We had some strange tires on the car, and after half an hour, the engine blew up. So I parked the car and I decided to packed the car and went back to the pits and said goodbye to everybody. And I was going through the car park, taking my rental car. And I thought, let's go to the airport. I take the first flight back home. And in the car park, I met Bob Wollek, who I drove with in 1983 in Monza. And Bob said to me, please, please stay here. You're going to drive with me now because I'm driving with two slow guys. And if you want to win the race, I need a strong guy like you. So please, turn around, park your car, take your stuff out of the car, and you drive with me. I said, okay. So I join you. And when I joined the team, I think the car was on the 17th position. And we did double stints, he and me, the whole night. It was drizzling at some time, so we could make a big advantage there. We caught everybody, and we were in the lead, I think 1 hour before the end. Got into the lead, and we won that race. Car was running perfect, very well balanced, no problem whatsoever. It was just a very strong drive from him and from me, very consistent. And we did a good job, and everything was fine with the car and with the driving and with the mechanics, and the pits were very good. So really enjoyable moment, and I still have it in my memory. Driving for Preston Hand was something really special. And the funny thing is that I have never seen Preston Hand after that anymore until a few years ago, just before he passed away. he called me and said, well, I've got an airplane for sale. Would you like to take care of that? I said, yes, sure, no problem. And in a few weeks, I found a buyer for his plane, and he was happy to do this kind of transaction in aviation after the good time we spent in motorsport. So it was nice to see him, to hear him, and to do some business with him too.
Can I go a bit left field here? And I'm a big fan of Formula 2, in especially the sort of last years of Formula 2 before Formula 3000 started. And of course, you won a couple of races on the old Nordschleife at the Nürburgring in 1981 with March and 1982 with Spirit. And then you were very close to winning the Formula 2 championship with Spirit in 82. Do you have fond memories of those days, and particularly those wins at the Nürburgring, you know, because that's just one of the most daunting tracks in the world.
Yeah, sure. It was very special. I won in Formula 3 too there the year before. So I won three races in 3 years and in three participations. I mean, I did one Formula 4 run when I was still doing military and not prepared. So I did a race in Formula 4 and it rained, so that didn't bring much. But after that, I prepared myself very well. I learned the circuit very well. I spent 2 times 5 days over there wearing out the rental car. And I knew the circuit very well, and it was a good moment. I mean, you must get into the rhythm, you must get into, you know, if you don't know the circuit very well, you cannot achieve to be quick and then to be driving with confidence, and only with confidence you can win. The first year, I remember driving with the March BMW. I was 15 seconds a lap quicker than the second car during the race, 15 seconds a lap, which showed that I was very well prepared. The year after, it was a bit more difficult because Bridgestone had introduced new tires for the Nürburgring that only tried in the race. They did not try them in practice. And these tires were not very efficient. I had big, big, big understeer all the way. So that I couldn't take advantage of my knowledge of the circuit like I did the year before because of disadvantage in the tires. But it was still good enough to win. So I was really happy in the end. I mean, it's something that's one of the highest plus points of my career too, is being able to win on the Nordschleife 3 times in a row in 3 years. So I was proud of myself for that.
Absolutely. Well, we'll bring this podcast to a wrap, but thank you ever so much, Thierry Boutsen, for coming on and joining us on the Autosport podcast. Thank you very much to Gary Watkins. I'm James Newbold, and thank you very much for tuning in to another edition of the Autosport podcast.